This is Audible.
Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of The Transaal Saga by Gary Paulson. Narrated by Johnny Heller.
Part 1. Chapter 1. The desert was unusually quiet. A gentle breeze tumbled over the sparse vegetation along the wide canyon floor, and then continued on its way to the north. 13-year-old Mark Harrison sat on a white slab of shale, studying a small army of ants that was carrying off the crumbs that had dropped from a granola bar he'd just eaten. A roadrunner, unaware of his presence, trotted to the base of the rock and stopped near a crimson cactus flower. Mark shifted position, and it scurried away in the opposite direction. He yawned, even though it wasn't late. The sun hadn't completely faded behind the blue-gray mountains to the west. Still, he had put in a long day. He'd walked farther that day than on any of the previous 3 days, and he was ready to turn in. His parents had given him just one short week to backpack across the old Magruder missile range. And if he didn't meet them at the appointed spot on the other side by Saturday afternoon, his mom had threatened to call out the National Guard. Hiking and backpacking were Mark's one obsession. He saved every dime of his paper route money to buy equipment, and now he had some of the best. In his spare time, he studied survival books and magazines to stay up on the latest techniques. But so far, he had been allowed to hike only short, easy trails, and had actually camped out only twice in his life. This time, he'd hit the jackpot, though. Mark stretched, ran his hand through his short brown hair, and grabbed his bedroll and pack. He decided to make camp in the canyon. The quiet here was a little unnerving for a city boy, but there was a trickle of water, and a dead tree that protruded from the south wall would provide plenty of firewood. When the small blaze was crackling and his bed was made, Mark stretched out on the soft down sleeping bag and stared up at the stars. This was the life he wanted for himself. Someday he'd fix it so that he was always camping under the wide open skies. He yawned again and was just about to settle in for the night when a flaming ball of fire shot over the edge of the canyon wall. The fiery thing was the size of a grapefruit, and glowed bright orange around its blue edges. It danced and sputtered when it touched the ground. Then it fizzled away to nothing. Mark snapped on his flashlight and found his camera. He scrambled to the top of the dirt wall and peeked over. To his right, behind a huge rectangular boulder, was a bright, iridescent beam of bluish-white light that seemed to be projected at the ground from somewhere in the sky. For a full minute, he stood transfixed, watching the strange tube of light. It had two sections, each supercharged with electricity. The sides pushed mightily against each other, but both were equal in power, so nothing moved except for an occasional shooting spark caused by the tremendous friction. He shook his head. This was worth looking into. Maybe it was some sort of experiment the Air Force had once conducted out here and then forgotten about. Or maybe. He swallowed. Maybe it was something not from this planet at all. Mark inched closer, snapping pictures as he went. When he reached the boulder, he used his flashlight to search for a way up and began climbing. The top of the big rock was flat. He pulled himself up and sat, staring again. The inside of the tube contained myriad surging colors, reds, blues, and yellows. It was like watching a spectacular laser light show being performed just for him. Slowly, he put out his hand to see if the light generated heat. Too late, he heard the rattle and felt the snake strike. He jerked his hand back and leaped to his feet. The sudden movement threw him off balance and he fell, off the boulder, and into the light. Chapter 2. The air was thick and humid and smelled of a coming rain. Mark opened his eyes. It was daytime, but the sun seemed to be hidden by clouds, and everything was in shadow. His head was pounding and felt as if it weighed a ton. He tried to remember. The light. There was the tube of blue light, and then... the snake. He glanced at his hand, which was resting comfortably on his chest. It wasn't swollen at all. Even more curious, it didn't hurt. Mark brought it closer. There were no marks anywhere from the rattler's bite. He flexed his fingers. They worked fine. It was as if nothing had happened. He dropped his arm and let it rest in the tall red grass beside him. Grass? Red? Mark rubbed his temples. I must be delirious, he thought. He turned his head. Trees. There were trees here. So many that they blocked his view of the sky. Their leaves were a dull burnt red, like the tall grass and the tangled brush that surrounded them. Something's wrong. Mark pulled himself to a sitting position. He'd read about this, about snake bite and what happened. It must be the snake venom. It's gone to my head, and now I'm having hallucinations. He took a deep breath and stood up. The sandy desert landscape was gone. It had changed to dense jungle. The canyon he had camped in the night before was nowhere in sight. The boulder and the blue light were gone, too. Nothing looked the same. A snorting sound came from beyond the trees. A large, hairy animal resembling a buffalo charged into the small opening. It had long tusks, beady eyes, and a pig-like snout. The thing waved its shaggy head back and forth, sniffed the air, and bellowed. This can't be happening. Mark edged toward the nearest tree. The instant he moved, the beast spotted him. It pawed the ground with its large hooves and lowered its massive head to attack. There was no time to think. Mark jumped for the closest branch and swung up into the tree just as the sharp tusks rushed underneath him. The animal stopped and sniffed the air again. Unable to locate its victim, the creature snorted and ambled off into the red forest. Mark stayed on the branch. He was shaking and his mind was in a whirl. All right. Would a hallucination attack me? This must be a real place, he whispered. But where is it? And how did I get here? He thought back to the night before and the energy-charged light. It has to be. Whatever that blue light was, it's the key. When I fell into the tube, it transported me to where? I don't even know if I'm on Earth anymore. An empty feeling in his stomach let him know that it was past breakfast. He shrugged it off and continued to reason with himself. Okay, I'm in another world. Possibly on another planet. One with red rubbery leaves and weird-looking animals. But I'm still me. My clothes are the same. I still get hungry. So what do I do now? He glanced around to make sure the buffalo creature was gone and slid down from the tree. The thing to do. For a full half minute, nothing came. No idea. Then he shrugged. The thing to do is look around. Let's see what we're dealing with here. Walking was difficult. The brush was thick and snarled in knots and tore at his jeans legs. Seeing more than a few feet ahead was impossible except in an occasional clearing. It was raining now. It sounded like a heavy rain, but the drops were barely able to penetrate the canopy. Only a few landed on the ground around him. He stuck out his tongue and caught a drop on the tip. It didn't taste like the rain back home. This stuff was bitter. It also smelled like the medicine his mother made him take when he had the flu. Shaking his head, he pulled his compass from his jeans pocket. The needle spun wildly, then settled on a direction to his right. He shoved the compass back into his pocket. For the sake of argument, it made him feel better to talk aloud, let's say there is a north here. Then if I keep going this way... He took two steps and found himself in gooey red mud up to his knees. He tried to climb out, but every time he moved, it sucked him down. Quicksand. No, don't panic. You know about this. Remember, you read about it in Hiker magazine. The red ooze quickly reached his thighs and continued to pull him down. Okay, flat. That's it. Don't fight. Remember, get flat and swim your way out, pushing the muck away from your face. He took a breath and fell over on his stomach. The mud instantly grabbed at his clothing, glued itself to his face, and dragged him under. His whole body was now covered with the slime. Using every ounce of strength, Mark struggled against the mud, but the precious few inches he managed to gain were quickly lost as he was sucked down again. He couldn't breathe. Wildly, he threw out his arms, trying to reach above him with his fingers. His left hand caught something solid near the edge of the pit. A root. He pulled, and when his head cleared the top, he gulped in air. Using his other hand, he grabbed some underbrush and kept tugging, until finally his upper body was resting on solid ground. He wiped at the slime blocking his nostrils, took a deep, raspy breath, and dragged his legs out. He was too tired to get up. Rolling onto his side, he curled up in the thicket and closed his eyes. Above him, the red leaves in the trees rustled. Something soft and warm plopped on his forehead. He opened his eyes. There were birds up there. Reaching for a fistful of grass, he wiped the bird poop off his muddy face without taking his eyes off the trees. It was hard to spot the birds because they were the same color as the leaves, but the longer he stared, the clearer they became. They had wide feathers, the same shape as the leaves, in long brownish beaks that blended with the branches. At least something lives in this stupid place besides that buffalo thing. Mark inched to his feet. The slimy red mud dropped off him in clods, leaving a thick, drippy goo clinging to his skin and clothes. He was exhausted, and his mouth was dry from sucking air. Water. If I'm going to survive this dream, or whatever it is, I need to find water. Careful to skirt the quicksand, Mark made his way through a wall of brush to a large red meadow of tall, wavy grass, where he could actually see patches of sky. But instead of the bright blue color that had been there yesterday, the sky was a hazy yellow. A rabbit-like creature with long, curly hair hopped across the clearing on its hind legs like a kangaroo. When it saw him, the fuzzy thing bounced away. Mark watched the animal disappear. I feel like Alice in Wonderland. All I need now is to find the Mad Hatter. The sudden rain had left shallow puddles in a few places across the meadow. Mark dropped to his knees and scooped the bitter liquid into his mouth. It was the only water available, so it would have to do. Maybe, he thought, not at all sure of the answer. Maybe it won't kill me. He drank until his sides hurt and his stomach threatened to send it all rushing back up. Then he fell into the tall grass to rest. Maybe he'd just stay here a while, take a nap. Or... His back was on fire. He leaped to his feet and began swatting wildly at his skin. Now his arms and legs were burning, too. Tubular, scorpion-like insects with antennas and long pincers swarmed over him, biting small chunks out of his skin. It felt as if they were eating him alive. Mark ripped off his shirt, shook it, and used it to try to scrape them off. The bugs didn't want to let go. They hung onto his flesh with both pincers. He smashed those he could reach with his hand. Some had to be pulled off, along with tiny pieces of his flesh. Between the cracks and the red mud on his skin, huge pink welts grew, covering his back, neck, chest, and arms. To make doubly sure he had all the bugs off, Mark ran to a tree and scraped his back against it. Then he removed his boots, jeans, and shirt, and the rest of his clothes. Laying his pocket knife, matches, and compass aside, he picked up his jeans and shook them vigorously. When he was positive his pants were bug-free, he gingerly put his foot into one leg. Behind him, he heard a familiar deep roar. He stiffened. Without looking, he dropped the jeans and raced behind the tree. The buffalo creature rammed the trunk in front of Mark. Birds spewed out from the branches, making loud screaming noises. The commotion didn't stop the creature. It backed up a few steps, then charged again, continuing to ram the tree until one of its long tusks became lodged in a crack. Mark used the opportunity to escape into the dense brush at the other side of the clearing. By the time the beast had dislodged itself, Mark was sitting safely in the lower branches of another tree. The creature sniffed the air. It had lost its prey again. The thing angrily stomped around the tree until it discovered Mark's shirt and ripped it to shreds. Then it started on one of his hiking boots. "No!" Mark yelled. "I need those!" The beast stopped. It blew out snot and trotted to the center of the meadow with the boot still in its teeth. "The stupid thing can't see more than about 10 feet, Mark thought. He carefully climbed down the tree and slowly moved behind another one. Keeping trees between himself and the beast, he managed to circle the meadow. Finally, the animal gave up hunting for him and crashed back into the forest. Mark ran to his clothes. His shirt was a rag. One boot was missing, and his jeans had been ground 2 inches into the wet soil. Chapter 3 Mark slumped against the tree. He was still in his underwear and socks, clutching his meager possessions. They included a pair of torn, filthy jeans, a belt, one boot, a broken compass, a watch, a smashed box of splintered matches, a knife, and the tattered cloth that had been his shirt. The bug bites were beginning to itch. He was hungry and miserable. Closing his eyes as tight as he could, he willed this awful place and all the strange things in it to go away. He opened his eyes. Nothing had changed. Wherever he was, this was reality. He was alone in this bizarre land, and if he wanted to stay alive, he would have to find ways to feed and take care of himself. Snatching some of the red grass, he held it up to his nose. It smelled like grass even though it was the wrong color. Hesitantly, he put a little in his mouth. It tasted like grass, too. He spat it out. Mark scraped the mud off his watch. It had stopped working. His stomach told him that if time in this place was anywhere near the same as on Earth, it was just after noon, and he'd already missed 2 meals. At home, his parents were probably eating lunch about now. Thinking about his parents made him feel more alone. They wouldn't know he was missing for another 2.5 days. And then what? Even if his mom called out half the Army Reserves, they'd never find him. Not here. Not in this primitive world that was accessible only through the strange energy tube. "Well, hotshot," Mark said, sighing. "You wanted to live by yourself." Resting his chin on his knees, he listened to the jungle noises around him. The trees creaked and the large flat leaves swayed in the breeze. There was an occasional shrieking sound he recognized as bird calls. He sighed again, then stood up and warily pulled on his filthy, damp jeans. Not wanting to ruin his socks, he took them off and stuffed them in his remaining boot, along with what was left of his shirt. Then he put his knife, matches, and compass in his pocket and started walking. His plan was to keep going until something better than what he'd already seen presented itself. It didn't. The jungle grew darker, more tangled, and more overgrown. Vines hung snake-like from the trees all around him. Grotesque lizards with abnormally large heads darted in and out of the foliage. and there was a new sound. In the tops of the now almost black trees, he could hear animals chattering. They made a clicking noise like stone hitting stone. Squinting, he scanned the branches overhead. Twice he thought he saw something move, but couldn't quite make out what it was. Mark wondered if he should go back to the meadow. He considered his position. At least there was water there. Here there was nothing. A piercing howl cut through the darkness. The clicking stopped. A shiver ran up Mark's back. He swallowed and waited. What now? Finally, the chattering started again, and he moved on. Normally, he was good at walking. It was something he prided himself on. He could walk for hours without resting. But this was different. His bare feet were being cut to ribbons by the coarse underbrush. And more important, he was hungry. He decided to turn back. The meadow area was safer because he could see what was around him. Maybe he'd miss something there that he could eat. It was worth a try. Just as he turned, the chattering sound came closer and grew to a deafening roar. Something hit the ground behind him. He spun around and received a crashing blow to the side of the head. A rock the size of his fist knocked him to his knees. Then came more rocks, pelting his body from every direction. He covered his head and rolled into a ball. Then, as suddenly as it had begun, the chattering stopped. So did the rocks. Mark dropped one of his aching arms. He was bruised and sore, but nothing felt broken. Above him he saw a flurry of motion. Swinging effortlessly from the branches were small, white, furry animals. He would have called them monkeys, but they looked more like miniature teddy bears with long arms and tails. One of them had stayed behind. With its sharp claws, it was clinging to a tree about halfway down the trunk, watching him.
"Get out of here!" Mark yelled, reaching for one of the rocks.
The monkey creature clicked its tongue loudly, rebuking him. It moved up the tree, but only a few feet. Mark drew his arm back to throw. He stopped. The object in his hand was heavy like a rock, and it felt smooth and round, but it had some sort of outer layer. He shook it. The inside sloshed around. He tried to peel it, but the skin was too tough. There's got to be a way. Mark gathered an armful of the tree rocks and headed out of the darkness. When he reached the edge of the meadow, he dropped his find in a pile and examined one of them. They were the color of the bark of the trees and resembled small coconuts. Mark shook one again. There's something in there. He reached for his pocket knife. "Oh, please let it be good for food," he whispered. There was a soft clicking a few feet behind him. Mark looked over his shoulder. The monkey bear had followed him. "Shoo, go away." Mark tossed one of the tree rocks at it. Like lightning, the little creature's long arm shot up and caught it. "Hey, that's pretty good." Mark turned back to what he'd been doing. He tried peeling the rock, but only bits of the heavy skin would come off. Something hit him in the shoulder. It was the tree rock. The monkey bear had tossed it back. "Cut that out. Can't you see I'm starving here?" He jabbed the knife into the top of the rock. Only the tip went in, and he was afraid to push harder because he might damage the knife. "I know there's got to be a way," he muttered. He took the rock to a nearby tree and pounded it against the trunk. Nothing. Disgusted, he threw it on the ground. The monkey bear waddled over, picked up the rock, inserted one of its razor-sharp claws in the middle, and easily broke it open. A thick brown liquid spilled out. The little animal greedily slurped it up from both halves, and then scooped out the dark meaty parts with its claws and shoved them in its mouth. Mark raced to his pile of rocks. He felt for a soft spot in the center of one and jabbed his knife in. Gradually, he worked the two sides apart. He lifted one of the halves to his lips and guzzled down the brown juice. It had a pleasant taste, like milk, only sweeter. He drank the other half, and then used his knife to dig out the meat. This part wasn't so great. It reminded him of bean sprouts, and he thought about spitting it out. Instead, he forced himself to swallow. It might be his only food source for a while. He went through 11 of the rocks before he was satisfied. The meal made him feel better. Now maybe he could concentrate on something besides his stomach. The light in the meadow was growing dim. Apparently this place had a night. He would have to choose a place to camp for the dark period. The thought of waking up to a buffalo creature, or whatever that howling thing was, worried him. He definitely didn't want to sleep here in the open. The dark part of the jungle didn't appeal to him much either. In the end, he compromised and decided to look for a spot just beyond the edge of the meadow. He found a nice grassy place just inside the shadows and well hidden by the brush. He watched the monkey bear waddle to a tree and shimmy up to a wide, flat branch the size of a small table. The animal stopped and looked at him expectantly. Mark rubbed the back of his neck. "I don't know. I really hadn't thought about spending the night in a tree." The monkey bear clicked its tongue and jumped up and down. "Oh, all right, I'll give it a try. I guess it would be a little harder for the bad ones to get to me up there. That is, if I don't fall out and break my neck." Getting to the lower branches was easy. He'd done that when the buffalo creature was after him. The middle part was a lot harder because the branches were farther apart. Mark tried a couple of times and gave up. The monkey bear scurried up to the top limbs and waited. Mark shook his head. "No, thanks. This is high enough for me. You go on ahead." He wedged his boot, which still held his few possessions, in between the trunk and the branch, and then stretched out on his stomach on the wide limb. "If I'm lucky, I'll wake up in the morning and this whole thing will all have been a dream. A bad dream," he thought, as he dozed off. Chapter 4 The warm night was long. Mark dozed fitfully and woke every few hours to the strange noises of the jungle. Twice he fell off his perch. Finally, he discovered that if he locked his legs around the limb, he was less likely to take a spill. The blue light haunted his dreams. Half awake, he recalled a similar energy force he'd read about once in science class. It was a theory some scientists had about what would happen if matter and antimatter ever actually met. Bits of information came back to him, something about the massive amount of power that would be produced and the way it could affect life. He didn't care about any of that, only that it had affected his life, and he wanted out of this place. Then, just as the meadow began to fill with the hazy yellow light of a new day, he jerked awake. The tube of light. Of course. He had to find it again. It was his way back to Earth and home. He grabbed his boot and dropped to the ground. Immediately, fierce hunger pain shot through him. Eat. He had to eat. And the only place he knew where there was any food was in the dark jungle. The blue light would have to wait. Mark tied his boot to his belt loop with the lace and started walking. The monkey bear crawled down a vine and landed softly beside him. "Where do you little guys keep your tree rocks, Willie?" The name just came. He seemed like a Willie. "You know what I'm talking about. Like the ones your buddies tried to kill me with yesterday. There wouldn't happen to be a great big stash just lying around somewhere easy." Willie cocked his head and clicked his tongue. Mark frowned. "I don't think we're doing too well in the communication department." He led the way into the shadowy jungle. On this trip, he paid more attention to the things he saw. The lizards were still there, and there were large flowering plants mixed in with the underbrush. He noticed that the trees in the dark jungle were different from the shorter ones closer to the meadow. Some were so tall he couldn't see the tops. This kind had smooth trunks with no low branches, and they usually had dozens of vines hanging from them. A few yards inside the dark jungle, he heard the clicking noise start. It didn't worry him this time. He was even prepared for the monkey bears to bombard him with tree rocks. It would save him from going after them. They didn't. Mark figured it had something to do with Willie, who clicked nonstop and stayed right with him. It was getting almost too dark to see. Mark searched the tops of the trees above him. They've got to be up there somewhere. I guess I'll have to climb. He yanked on one of the vines to see if it would hold his weight. It seemed sturdy enough. He jumped and tried to haul himself up, but his arms were too weak and he slid back down. I should have paid more attention to rope climbing in gym class. He moved to another vine. This one was hanging closer to the trunk. He braced his bare feet against the smooth bark, and using the vine for leverage, he slowly walked up the tree at an angle. Halfway up, he glanced down and nearly lost his balance. He guessed it was more than a 30-foot drop to the ground. A dizzy feeling washed over him, and his palms began to sweat. He closed his eyes until the feeling passed. Then he climbed again. At the first limb he came to, he stopped. He sat for a long time, just clinging to the vine and trying not to look down. Willie had climbed past him and was clicking at him from the top branches. Mark looked up and saw him swinging back and forth from one limb to another. Above Willie, Mark spotted a cluster of tree rocks dangling from the end of a long branch and half hidden under the wide leaves. He tied the vine around his waist and worked his way up to the next limb. Once he made it to the end of the long, narrow branch, the tree rocks were easy to pick. He pulled off every one he could reach and let them fall to the ground. With no warning, there was a crack, and Mark felt himself falling. He grabbed at air, swung backward, and jolted to a stop midway to the ground. The vine he tied around his waist held. He fastened his arms around the closest limb and clung to it. Willie crawled down to see what was going on. "I think," Mark said, taking a deep breath, "that's probably enough shopping for one morning." Chapter 5. "It could be anywhere." Mark threw up his hands. He had managed to find the clearing where he'd first awakened in the tall red grass, but the blue light didn't show itself. His stomach made a loud rumbling sound. He was hungry all the time now. The tree rocks were good, but they were mostly liquid and only took the edge off his appetite. He wanted something solid. Pizza. Pizza would be good. Thick crust, smothered in three different kinds of melted cheese. He would kill for a pizza. Stupid. Hearing the word aloud caught him off guard. He said it again, slower. Stupid. Daydreaming isn't going to get you anywhere. Think. Think about all the tons of stuff you read in those How to Stay Alive books. Use it. Mark concentrated. The problem was all those books were for Earth. He was sure he had come to another planet. Earth-like, perhaps, but so strange. Still, some things would work. The handbooks all said to check out the surroundings. Food was usually not too far away. Bugs were always handy. He made a face. The fire bugs deserved to be food, but how would you eat them without ripping your tongue out? Okay, what else? The screaming birds? No, too difficult. Maybe later, after he had more time to think and plan and get some kind of weapon. The fathead lizards. They were slow and would be easy to catch. But then what? He'd have to figure out a way to cook them. And what if they were poisonous? What if anything was poisonous? No, he'd stick with convenience foods for now. Stuff he knew hadn't killed other animals. Life here seems similar to Earth life. Food might work the same. Whatever other animals could eat, he could eat. Maybe. What else had he read? There was the usual stuff on keeping warm. He rubbed his bare arms. Unless the weather changed, he wouldn't have to worry about that. Shelter. He really didn't need a house, but he didn't want to sleep on that stupid limb forever either. He opened a tree rock as he walked back toward the big meadow. His spirits were higher, and the ideas kept coming. Until he located the light, he would live next to the dark jungle, because that was where the tree rocks were, and the buffalo creatures didn't seem to go there. And, of course, there was Willie. It was nice to have company. In the meantime, he would make circles, wider and wider every day, hoping to find the mysterious blue light. Chapter 6. The firebugs had been easy to collect. The only trick was making sure none of them got on his skin while he was concentrating on catching the others. Mark had eased up to the outer edge of a colony and picked off the stragglers. With his knife, he sliced their pincered heads off, stabbed them through the middle, and deposited them safely in a sock. For lunch, he had 4 tree rocks and more than a dozen of the long, crunchy insects. The first one was the hardest to swallow. His mind and his stomach fought over the idea until the hunger pains won out. He closed his eyes and pretended he was munching on the trail mix he'd packed for his hike. Break's over. Mark tied a knot in the top of his bug sock and dropped it on his dwindling pile of tree rocks. Back to work, Willie. The monkey bear slapped the ground with his thick black palms and followed Mark to a tree just inside the dark part of the jungle. Mark had chosen this particular tree because it had 2 strong limbs that forked into a perfect V. For the better part of the morning, he had been hauling dead branches to his tree and arranging them across the 2 limbs to form a floor. When the branches were fitted together as closely as possible, he went to the edge of the meadow and broke off long sticks in the tangled underbrush. Using a pattern he'd seen in an army survival manual, he wove the supple twigs into a loose mat and placed it on the floor. Almost finished. All we need now is some of those big rubbery leaves, and presto, the master bedroom is complete. No more hitting the ground in the middle of the night. Come on, Willie. We'll get the leaves and some extra tree rocks for tomorrow, and then we'll have just enough time to make a small circle around the outskirts of the meadow. Mark discovered that his eyes adjusted more quickly to the shadowy jungle this time. He even spotted a group of monkey bears before they saw him. They were startled and scrambled to the tops of the trees. "I wish I could get up there that fast," Mark muttered. He chose a sturdy vine and began the long process of walking up the side of the tree. Willie climbed over him, grabbed another vine, and swung up into the branches of a tall tree. Mark studied his vine. "There's got to be an easier way." He dropped to the ground. "An extension ladder would be good." He shrugged. "So would a helicopter." He tied a loop near the bottom of the vine and put all his weight on it. It held. He tied another loop a little higher in another vine next to his and stepped into it. Back and forth he went, tying loops to create a makeshift ladder until he had climbed into the low branches. "Okay, now what? There won't always be rocks in this tree, and I can't take my ladder to the next one." Mark scratched his head. He watched Willie swinging back and forth on the vines. It looked so easy. Mark yanked on one of the higher vines, testing it. Before he could talk himself out of it, he pushed off. It wasn't as bad as he'd imagined. Twice more he swung out, swept back, and landed lightly on the limb. The third time he pushed off, he swung out halfway to the next tree, reached for another vine, and missed. Chapter 7. Everything on him hurt. Mark rolled to his side and nearly screamed. Something inside him had ripped apart. A large flowering plant had helped to break his fall, but every time he moved, even a fraction of an inch, searing pains racked his body. and tried not to breathe, not to blink. It was raining again. He could hear the soft, comforting sound of the drops hitting the leaves. A drink of water. Even the bitter stuff in the puddles would taste good right now, he thought. Get up. Get to the water. He forced himself to stand, and nearly passed out from the pain. Taking short, ragged breaths only when absolutely necessary, he moved toward the meadow a few halting steps at a time. Near his tree, he lowered his aching body to a large puddle and drank. He could feel himself starting to fade. With effort, he stood and turned to look at his tree. There was no way. If he tried to pull himself up to his bed, he might make the damage inside him worse. He stumbled to the tall grass in the shadows, sank into it, and allowed the blackness to take over. The clicking. It was high-pitched and loud and next to his ear. Make it stop, he thought. He groggily opened his eyes and stared dully into Willie's furry round face. The monkey bear squealed and patted Mark's head. You haven't got any aspirin, have you? Mark sat up, his breath hissing with pain. It was his ribs. Maybe he'd cracked one or more. He'd heard somewhere that cracked ribs hurt like blazes when you took a breath. He had to tape them up in some way. He felt inside his boot for his tattered shirt, tore it into strips and tied the pieces together. Then he wrapped the makeshift bandage tightly around his ribs. They still hurt, but the pain seemed more under control. He was hungry, but then he was always hungry. Judging from the way his stomach was growling, he figured he had probably slept through a meal or two. Next to his tree, he could see his stack of tree rocks. Inching to his feet, he slowly made his way to the pile. His stash of firebugs was still in the sock where he'd left it. He ate and lay back down. Tomorrow, he would have to find a new food source. The tree rocks were out of his reach for now. Scouting for the blue light was also out of the question for a while. He would just have to take it easy and try to be patient until his ribs healed. To take his mind off the pain, he forced himself to think about ways to make his existence here more bearable. When he was able, he would build a ladder for his treehouse. And some kind of weapon would be nice, in case he ran into that howling thing on one of his trips into the dark jungle. And food. It always came back to that. He had to eat. He chewed on the end of a long piece of red grass. He wondered what his parents would do when they found out he was gone. He was their life. His mom was a member of the parents' club at school. She never missed a function and volunteered for everything. And his dad. His dad was so proud of his only son. He had established a college fund when Mark was a baby. He told all his friends that someday his son was going to be a doctor. I could use a doctor right now, Mark thought. He closed his eyes and dreamed of going home. Chapter 8. Days turned into weeks. Mark didn't know how many. He did his best not to think so much about home, his parents, and the way things had been, and tried instead to concentrate on the strange new world around him. His ribs had been slow to heal. For weeks his diet had consisted mainly of a variety of insects. He had managed to find a kind of bland-tasting grubworm that lived in the flowering plants, and a jumping redbug that reminded him of the grasshoppers back home, only larger. Once in a while he was lucky enough to find a discarded tree rock that one of the monkey bears had dropped in the dark jungle. Now he was making circles again. He was still wearing his bandage and was careful not to push himself too hard, but scouting was important to him. If he wanted to go home, the blue light had to be found. On one of his rounds, he discovered a swamp of quicksand not too far into the dark jungle. If it hadn't been for a screaming bird that was stuck in it and fighting to get free, he might have stumbled into it himself. Another time, and around in the light jungle, he'd found a clear pool of water that came from an underground spring. Visiting the pool was a treat for him. It was his favorite part of every day. When he'd first seen his reflection in the pond, it had startled him. The person looking up from the water was so skinny his bones stood out like a skeleton's. A dirty skeleton, with shaggy, matted hair. If he stood just right, and looked through an open patch of jungle, beyond the pool he could see the peaks of distant mountains. He'd made up his mind to go there when he was completely well. The treehouse was much different now. In between hunting for food and scouting, Mark had fashioned a wooden ladder by securing rungs to two tall branches with vines. He had also added a second story, a small platform that held his food supplies. He'd also put a lot of effort into weapons. The best one so far was a spear. It was a long, straight pole with a finely carved point. Now he was working on a bow using a strong stick and a shoestring from his boot. He still hadn't made too much progress with it, and there didn't seem to be much straight wood for arrows. He had to hunt for food, and he'd need skins for clothing when his jeans wore out. But he didn't seem to need weapons for defense. So far, the animals in the area hadn't posed much of a threat. The buffalo creatures came around, but because of their poor eyesight, Mark could easily hide from them. They represented a lot of meat, of course, but running up to one of them and sticking a spear in it bordered on suicide. Other animals didn't bother him, and except for occasional visits from Willie, the monkey bears didn't want anything to do with him. To them, he was just another animal in the jungle. Twice Mark had killed fathead lizards. He had used some of his match tips to start a fire, and had roasted his catch on the end of a green limb. The meat was a little grainy, but they were the most filling meals he'd had since coming to the Red Forest. Life was simple. Find food, scout the countryside, try to make new things, and sleep. Life was simple. Except that sometimes, in the still of the night, he could hear the faint call of the howling thing. And once at the pool, he'd seen tracks that resembled dog prints, only bigger. Chapter 9. Whenever he went out now, Mark took the spear. The sharpened point was 4 inches long, and it made him feel better to carry the weapon. His circles were getting larger, and sometimes he was forced to spend the night away from his tree. That day he had traveled quite a distance from home. Early that morning he had packed both socks and his boot with food, stopped by the pool for a long drink, and then started out. To anyone else, the miles of red forest and never-ending trees might have looked the same, but Mark was getting to be an expert at noticing differences. Earlier, he had discovered a new meadow where the grass wasn't quite so red and was short and dry. The trees weren't as tall there either, and their leaves had an odd orange tint. Mark continued on, listening for new sounds. His ears had become tuned to every noise in the jungle. He knew even small sounds, like the breeze rippling through the grass. Here, though, something was making him uncomfortable. It wasn't so much what he heard as the sounds he didn't hear. This part of the jungle was too still, not even the sound of birds. Ahead of him, a newly broken twig dangled from a larger branch. Mark stopped and searched the ground. There were no tracks, but he could see where the grass had been pushed down by something that had recently passed through. Raising his spear, Mark moved silently through the trees. Whatever was out there was close. A horrible squeal broke the silence. Mark froze. It was close, somewhere in front of him. He hustled up the nearest tree and waited. Nothing came his way. Still he waited. He'd learned not to take chances. Finally the birds came back, and the sounds in the forest returned to normal. Mark dropped to the ground and picked his way through the brush. 200 yards in front of him, he saw another clearing with low grass. Staying in the cover of the trees, he listened. He couldn't shake the feeling that something was wrong. The clearing was empty. It was dry, and light red like the last one, except for one dark splotch of color on the other side. Mark skirted the outside, staying well hidden in the brush. The dark color intrigued him. He reached down and touched it. Blood. Mark ducked back in the trees. Any animal that had lost that much blood had to be big. And what disturbed him even more was that whatever killed it had managed to carry the whole thing off without leaving even a tiny piece of the carcass. Get away. He had to get away. There was no time to lose. He turned and was about to rush back around the clearing when he spotted something in a tree. Quietly, almost reverently, he walked to it and pulled it from the trunk. It was an arrow. Chapter 10. Mark couldn't sleep. Before dawn, he was sitting on his mat in the treehouse, turning the arrow over and over in his hands. It had colorful black and red feathers from birds he'd never seen. The shaft was painted with a black zigzag design, and the point was made of a sharp, chiseled rock skillfully attached with a piece of water-shrunken leather. Finding the arrow changed everything. It meant that he was not alone in this place. There were other beings here who could think and hunt and make weapons. Mark considered his options. Maybe it would be safer to avoid them and move deeper into the dark jungle. They would never find him there. But what about the blue light? He couldn't stop searching for it. It was the only link to home and his mother and father. Spontaneously, his mind conjured up smells from the barbecue his dad had cooked in their backyard the day before Mark left to go on his hike. He remembered how comical his father had looked in the chef's hat, which kept sliding down over his ears. The way his mother had kept stealing glances at Mark told him she was worried. She had pretended to be happy, but he could tell. All that seemed like 100 years ago. What would they think if they could see him now? Ragged and dirty, with thick, tough calluses on the bottoms of his feet. His mother would be shocked. Now he behaved and thought more like an animal than a human, sneaking around the forest, doing his best to survive. Willie climbed down from the top branches and sat beside him. Mark stroked the monkey bear's soft white fur. "What should I do, boy? For all I know, these people, if they are people, could be a worse threat than the howling thing." Still holding the arrow, Mark reached for his homemade bow and climbed down from the tree. He wouldn't think about them now. If nothing else, he had a new weapon. He would study the arrow and design more like it. The first time he tried to shoot it, his string was too loose, and the arrow just plopped into the dirt about 20 feet away. The second time, after he had pulled the shoestring taut on the bow, it flew in an arc across the meadow. He ran after it. This is so great. On his trip to the pool that morning, he would gather any small rocks he could find to use as tips. Then he'd come back early from his scouting trip and hunt for feathers. He shot the arrow again. This time he hit the bush he was aiming at dead center. He retrieved the arrow and went back to his tree to pack a small supply of food for his trip. Along with his tree rocks and his sock of edible insects, he took a long strip of lizard jerky. He discovered that if he hung the thin pieces of meat over a limb to dry, he could take them with him on his travels and they wouldn't spoil. Proudly, he reached for his spear. Today, he would have two weapons. But what he needed was a quiver to hold his new arrow. He jammed the tree rocks and jerky in his boot, so one sock would be free. Then he tore holes, one on each side near the top of the sock, and tied on a long piece of his old bandage as a strap. He placed the arrow gently in the sock and slung the bow and quiver over his shoulder. As usual, he went to the pool first. He looked for rocks, but there weren't many, and they were too smooth and round to be used for arrowheads. He studied the arrow again. The shiny rock used for the tip was different from any in the area. That meant that the owner of his arrow didn't live around here. He must have come to this part of the jungle on a hunting trip from some other part of the planet. Mark looked at the mountains. Maybe the arrow people came from there. Suddenly he made up his mind. He wanted to find these people, or aliens, or whatever they were. Anybody would be better than being alone. That day, instead of circling, he would scout in a straight line. That morning he had been worried about whoever had left the arrow. Now he was curious, almost desperate, to find out more about them. Chapter 11. The day's scouting trip had taken him into strange new territory. The vegetation was still dense, but it was more yellow than red, and the trees were short and gnarled. The only animal he'd seen all day was deer-like. She was as big as a horse and had short, curled horns. Two small, spotted fawns were following her. When she saw Mark, she bounded away with her young close behind. There had been no sign of the arrow people. Discouraged, Mark decided he must be wrong about them living in the mountains. The next day he would try a different direction. Sitting down under one of the short, leafless trees, he cracked open a tree rock. The forest here was dry, barren, and ugly. He was glad he lived where he did. He laughed. He was home proud. Some branches in a tree, and he was proud of them. He drank the brown juice and contemplated the thought. It was possible that he would never be able to find the light. So far he hadn't really made any long-term plans because he considered all this temporary. But what if it wasn't? What if he was destined to live in this primitive world the rest of his life? A loud yell stopped his thoughts. Mark jumped to his feet. A voice. The arrow people. He grabbed his weapons and waited. Nothing. Why hadn't he been paying attention? He couldn't tell how far away the voice was or which direction to search in. The yell changed to an agonized scream. Someone was hurt. Mark started running. He raced through the brush toward the sound. Just when he thought he'd lost the sound, the terrified scream came again. He tore through the forest, jumping over bushes and ducking under limbs. He was on it almost before he realized it. By crouching low in the brush, he spotted what seemed to be a kind of dog or wolf. It was standing on its back legs, and its head reached high into the low branches. The creature had its back to Mark, and was clawing at something in the tree. The howling thing. There was no doubt about it. It was huge, on its back legs at least as tall as Mark. The gray fur on its back was coarse and bushy, and long foamy gobs of saliva dripped from its mouth. Something in the tree. Mark thought it was some kind of monkey, and partially hidden in the leaves was frantically trying to climb higher. But one arm hung limp, and one leg was bloody. The howling thing was clawing it to death. Without thinking, Mark took his single arrow and fitted it to his bow. He stepped out of the trees, aimed, drew, and released all in one motion. The shot was as good as he could hope for. It struck the howling thing in the center of the back. But it wasn't enough. The beast wheeled and came for him. Mark stumbled backward, reaching for his spear. He wanted to run, but his legs felt riveted to the ground. The howling thing covered the space in three jumps and leaped, its weight carrying Mark back and down and slamming him into the ground. 1 second, Mark thought. My throat will be gone in a second. Everything ended. It didn't happen. He pushed out from under the heavy animal. The howling thing was dead. When it had lunged for him, Mark had instinctively raised the spear. The sharp point had gone through the animal's heart, killing it instantly. Blood ran down Mark's face.